Om Shanti. Good morning. Just in one sentence, the summary of the song that was playing. God is giving you everything that He has. All the treasure stores are open and you can take as much as you choose. Everything is available for you. That's just one sentence summary. I want to pick up on yesterday's Murali, and Baba spoke about self-sovereignty, being the masters of the self. And Baba had an interesting question. If today there isn't self-sovereignty, and such a person becomes a leader in Satyug, what would Satyug become? Satyug would also become Kaliyug. And so there's a natural karmic law that works. And so anyone who doesn't have self-sovereignty cannot become a leader in Satyug. That was one interpretation or one aspect. So I was thinking of the story of the Ramayana and how the story of the Ramayana demonstrates how all the senses can deceive you. And finally, it's the intellect that deceives you. But yes, at first it's the sensory organs. And so the way Baba teaches us is soul consciousness. And through soul consciousness becoming the master first of the physical senses, and then deeper practice of soul consciousness, connection with God, and being able to take power from God, so that then it's not just the physical senses that are under control, but the next step that you're able to control the inner faculties of the soul, the mind, the intellect, and the sanskaras. And then you're going to be on the journey of being able to conquer Maya, conquer the vices, and then finally settle all the karmic account of sins. So it's a step-by-step journey. And the song today in the Murali is, O traveller of the night, don't become weary. And it's interesting that normally when it's dark, people know that it's dark. But in Kali Yuga, the intellect is so deluded that you don't even know that there's darkness. Strange. You think it's okay, this is normal. And then of course the story of the frog at the bottom of the well and other frogs, and they've never seen sunlight, so they don't know what it's like. And so the state of the majority of people in Kali Yuga, the billions and billions, and think about the population of Satyug, only in hundreds of thousands. So the vast majority, the billions, have never seen light, drama, karma. And in that state of darkness, they don't see the difference between falsehood and truth. And so we are living in an era of post-truth. And today we're living, beginning to see the era of artificial intelligence. There was a little video that I think Jemini Ben sent around that showed two Indian dancers. Anybody see that? Okay. It's just a 2-minute thing. But it's got Indian classical music and two Indian Bharatanatyam dancers. And it's only when there's a close-up that you see that their faces and their expressions are a little bit wooden, and there doesn't seem to be any life in the performance. But if you're just seeing the performance, and most of the video is from a distance, so you wouldn't tell. And it's AI, it's robots, and they're doing this amazing Bharatanatyam dance, which probably with further creativity they'll be able to dance even better than human beings, because you're not actually having to conquer their limbs or practice or do rehearsals. So I'm looking at Pearl and and she's thinking about, well, is this going to be the next step? So a state where you don't even differentiate between real and not real, artificial. And so that's the period we're living in. And from this state of darkness, Baba comes to bring light into the world, and through giving all of us light, and the doors are open for everyone to come and experience that light. But people don't understand what light means, and so they ignore it and they're happy to continue in their darkness. So the story of the Ramayana, and Sita, the devoted wife of Rama, has spent nearly 14 years banished from the palace. She didn't need to. The father of Rama said to her, but it's Rama who's supposed to be banished, not you. You don't have to go. But out of her love for Rama, she wanted to be with Rama and support him on every level. So she goes into the jungle and big scripture of all the different stories of what they encountered and what happened. But as they're nearing the end of that period of banishment, she sees this beautiful golden deer and she wants it. And she sends Rama to get it for her. And she's totally unwilling to listen to reason. Her eyes have been trapped. Her eyes have been attracted, and this is what she wants. And Rama tells her, we're going to the palace. The deer doesn't like being indoors. He wants to be out in the jungle. What are you going to do with the deer? Are you going to tie him up inside the palace? He won't want that. But doesn't matter. No reason works. So she sends him off. And so the separation of the soul from God, when first I'm tempted by something that's attracting me, I want it. I don't need another pair of shoes. I don't even have enough money to get food, but I still want those shoes. And somehow or another, I go get those shoes. And of course then, after a day or two, novelty is worn off and they're not interesting anymore. But Rama goes off to get the deer. And then she hears a sound. And it sounds like Rama in distress, crying for help. And again, the next companion, Lakshman, Rama's younger brother, she wants to send him off to help Rama. And he doesn't want to go because she's going to be left alone in the jungle and it's dangerous. And so he draws a line and says, you have to stay within that line. And if you cross that line, it's dangerous for you. And she agrees. And so Lakshman, the mind, is given an aim, and the aim is to stay within the line of Srimad. If I stay within the parameters of Srimad and don't get into disobeying God's instructions, I'll still remain safe. But so Lakshman goes off, and it was again another illusion. Rama's God is never going to get into trouble, and she's forgotten that, so she's then left alone within this circle. And then there's a beggar who comes, and she feels it's her duty to give him alms, donation. And she tells him to come closer so that she can give the donation, and he refuses. And considering it to be her duty, she steps out of the line. And of course then she sees it's Ravan, the demon, and she's captured, and another whole episode begins, which was totally unnecessary. And so the intellect is first deluded by the eyes. The intellect is then deluded by the ears, by sound. Then the intellect is deluded in terms of recognition of right and wrong. And more important than the instruction God's instructions is the attraction or the sense of duty. And it could be either. Sometimes there's a compulsion. We think we should, we have to, and we need to. And so we step out of the line. And of course then that's what Maya, Ravan have been waiting for. And then it's no more subtle, no more incognito. Now it's a very visible, very aggressive form of the vices that comes. And so the soul gets trapped. So the story of the Ramayana deals with the way we've come into Kali Yuga. We've lost control of our senses. We get distracted by our eyes. We get distracted by our ears. And finally, the intellect itself is so polluted that it can no longer differentiate between what I should do and what I shouldn't do. And so wrong actions. And the wrong actions then, of course. Baba's been talking a lot about the way Maya works in the last 2 weeks, more or less. And when Maya does come, and she does manage to pull you out of the srimad, the line of conduct, then of course the whole cycle of sorrow, of guilt, of moving away from yoga, not finding jnana interesting, not finding any experience in yoga, and the slippery slope is a very fast descent into the state where, well, I don't know what to do anymore, I can't manage. So the story of Sangam Yuga is this whole story of conquest of the senses. And the only way to be able to do this is through that detachment from my chariot, from this body. And in that state of soul consciousness, then I can check to what extent is it that I am the master or my senses are the master. And then Baba asks the question, are you the master or is the mind your master? And so my mind is not stable. My mind is wandering around here and there. And I think that, well, that's what life is. And I don't realize that there is something higher than the mind that needs to be in touch with God to get that wisdom from God to be able then to discipline the mind. At the end of Kali Yuga, we don't like the word discipline. And so to discipline the senses, it goes against the grain. To discipline the mind, we don't have the power and the knowledge to be able to do that. And here is Baba offering me total mastery. And I'm not ready to follow the discipline of yoga, of jnana, and I find myself then getting into sorrow again and again. And so the journey of Raj Yoga, hey traveller of the night, don't get weary. And if the journey is a straight one, yes, there'll be ups and downs, but not in terms of bad karma, thoughts, words maybe. But if the journey is more or less in the right direction, then I'll get there. But if the journey is, I take 10 steps forward and come 8 steps back, then the same journey is going to be so long that I get totally tired. And so the tiredness of the body is not the factor. The tiredness of the soul is where I'm not able to focus on yoga, or I'm not able to connect with God. And so the reason for studying the Murali every day, to remind myself of what is Srimad, what does Baba say, and what do I need to do now, and to get to the point where I come to the state of self-mastery. But also, Baba's often spoken about conquest of the elements, and dadis, older dadis, but especially Dadi Janki, who had a fragile body. On the one side it wasn't very strong, but on the other side the amount of walking she did right from in the days of Abu, the days of Karachi, everything was indoors. They couldn't go out. There was a war going on outside. It was bad atmosphere outside. So occasionally Papa took them to the seaside. And so all the daddies love the seaside. It brings back memories of Karachi for all of them. But in the days of Abu, Baba made them walk. You walk for your breakfast. You walk up and down the mountains and eat the berries from the trees, and that's your very healthy breakfast. And of course, when they started service, Daddy Janki relates the story of walking every day from a place called Worli to Kolaba. I don't know how you would calculate it in terms of miles or kilometers, but a long walk. It's even without traffic, it's a good 15-20 minute car journey. And so can you imagine walking? It's a long walk. And she did that every day, there and back, because she was living in Worli with her mother and doing service, and service took her to the center of town and so on. Pune, she would walk. She would walk from one place where she was having class to another place, and that was a good 1 hour walk. So 2 hours of walking every day for a whole stretch of time, and it gave her a strong constitution. But her lungs were weak, her heart was weak, everything was not as it should be. But she lived to 104, and doing service until 104. January, she was still doing service. February, she was out of action. March, she flew away. So I don't know many 104s who are continuing to do service at that age, but Daddy did. So the conquest of elements, and we saw this in the Dadis, the way they managed their physical bodies, the elements of the earth, but also with Daddy Janki. I was asked a question in India. Baba Smriti had been something about time and becoming the master of time. And they asked me, had I seen Daddy Janki become the master of time? And yes, I've seen how she's so engrossed in service and she doesn't want to miss that opportunity. And we'll tell her the plane's about to go, the train's about to go, and she'd say, it'll wait for me. And planes and trains did wait for her. But there was one particular story. She was with Indu Ben, Lester Indu, and they were supposed to be going from Ahmedabad to Delhi because Daddy was going to go to the Philippines, and the flight was from Delhi. And here in Ahmedabad, it's the monsoons, and so the board is showing the flight to Bombay is cancelled, the flight to Delhi is cancelled. And then Daddy's eyesight was interesting. She didn't see things she didn't want to see, and she couldn't hear the things she didn't want to hear, and she could see the things that most other people can't see, and she could see. And her eyes fell on the board, and she said, there's a flight to Pune. And Indu said, well, we don't need to go to Pune, we want to go somewhere else. And she said, no, they've been asking me to come to Pune because Dada Govind. How many of you knew Dada Govind? One, two, a handful, early days. So anyway, so the whole family, very close to Baba. Mama stayed in their home in Pune for 2 weeks. So you can imagine how close they were. So Dada Govind had been in the yagya, and then he later became an instrument for the invitation for the Dadis to go to Japan for the interfaith conference that was happening there. So a very powerful soul, and Daddy was very deeply connected with him because she was in charge of something called Boy Bhavan in the days of Karachi. And this was all the young boys who were there. The older boys were in another bhavan. They had about 7 different bhavans where different people stayed. So one was the sister's bhavan, the kumari is another one, the mother's bhavan, and so on. So he was in boy bhavan together with his brother, and that he would share stories of how they were very mischievous, and all the boys, not just Dada. And she had to give them a lot of love, but also teach them a lot of discipline. And then by the time Dada was about 15, he came to Baba and said, "I really want to go out into the world and earn my fortune." And Baba said, "Of course, the door's open." So he'd gone. But he always stayed very close to the Yajna and came to London several times, the early days of Tennyson Road. So he was in his last period, and the family had been asking Daddy to come. And so she said, "Well, I can't go to Delhi, but I can go to Pune. Let's go to Pune." So she went off to Pune, and she arrived, gave him drishti, and the soul flew away, and they had the cremation immediately. Anyway, they would do that in India, but also they wanted to do it while Daddy was there. And she caught an evening flight to Delhi and caught a flight to the Philippines. Now that has been the master of time. I mean, on an ordinary human level, you just wouldn't even think about it. But that he sees Pune flight, off she goes, and manages to get back to catch her flight. So, master of time. Many different stories that I'm sure some of you have about seeing the Dadis be the master of time. So you can see why these are the souls who will be the leaders in the golden age. They've been leaders and masters here, and they've managed to come to that state of mastery on all levels. And so yes, definitely. You know, when Baba says as time goes on, things will become clear. In the early days, and you wouldn't have said that, yes, these are the souls who are going to be the masters of the golden age. But today, where we stand in terms of time, it's very clear these souls are the masters of the golden age. But if I want to be part of that kingdom, then that also depends on my effort today to attain the same mastery.